It's episode 701 of the Short Time Wrestling Podcast. My name is Jason Bryant. News, reviews, previews, and interviews from the notable names in and around the sport of wrestling. Last episode was a big one. We talked with Lee Miracle and Ashley Flavin about the announcement the NAIA was sanctioning wrestling as a championship sport. It's been an invitational sport for the last couple of years. They will have a national championship. You can go back and listen to that one at matttalkonline.com/700 to get an immediate reaction from those two championship coaches. Today on the show, oh boy, Olympic and world champion Kenny Monday. Going to talk about what he's doing at Spire Institute and Academy in Geneva, Ohio. We go talk about that, but of course, whenever you have a name like Kenny Monday on the show, you want to get some stories. He's got some cool stuff coming up here. But before we get to Mr. Monday, and yes, I'm going to call him Mr. Monday because he is Mr. He's a bad dude still. He points out that he is 60 years old and he can probably still mess people up. He'll tell a story about Ray Lewis in here too and scrapping with Ray Lewis on the wrestling mat. That's actually quite interesting to the whole segment of the story. What's crucial to the segment of this story is the team memberships, the contributions, the Patreon contributions, the Rockfin subscriptions. That is what keeps the lights on. I hate using that term, but right now I'm looking at a light and it's on. So if it wasn't for these contributions, I would have no reason to turn those lights on and provide content, historical stuff, up-to-date news. I mean, there's a lot of stuff going out there, and you can actually check out the video of this Kenny Monday interview ad-free on the Patreon channels by going to matttalkonline.com/contribute. You can click on the Patreon link or you can click on the Rockfin link. You'll get the videos on both of those formats. And something that for some of you Patreon members may not know is there are bonus content that I cannot format very well in the Patreon side, but there is a plugin that I've got to Matt Talk Online. You can log in with your Patreon account if you're a contributor to the Matt Talk Podcast Network, and you get that bonus content. I put it on Rockfin. I also put it on Patreon. You're not missing out. It just depends on the level of perks you want to get. So some of it directly to me. Some of it is a network effect with it's less expensive for Rockfin depending on your level of giving. Patreon's very flexible in how you want to do it, 20, 10, 5, 15, touchdown, all that stuff. So matttalkonline.com/contribute. You get ad-free RSS feeds. You get all sorts of videos. You get stuff ahead of time. You get stats and figures that I don't put anywhere else. So you get exclusive access to the sandbox and the brains that are behind the preview guide. You get the preview guide, too, the Fargo Almanac I'm about to redo and update for 2022. All that fun stuff, matttalkonline.com/contribute. Mark Smith is the latest patron of the Matt Talk Podcast Network, so that whole pitch was to talk about Mark. Mark, thank you for your contributions. We had a number between the last two episodes. Of course, I went quite a bit between 698 and 699. Ed Giese when I was in Budapest. Upcoming shows, Josh Roden, longtime coach at Clackamas, now the new assistant coach at Oregon State. He's coming up on the show, as is author, wrestling nerd, pro wrestling nerd, comic book guy, Fargo coach, J.D. Oliva from Illinois. He's going to be on the show, and we're working on some stuff coming through. When I go to the Pan Am Championships, I'll be broadcasting that through UWW. You can hear me on Flow Sports starting Cinco de Mayo. Actually, it'll be 6/7/8. And what's also painful is the 8th is my anniversary. It is also going to be Mother's Day, and my wife will not be with me in Acapulco. I tried to twist her arm on that, but that one, I did everything I could to have an anniversary in Acapulco, but it's around a wrestling tournament. We'll do that one of these days, but that's what's coming up. So I'll have some content coming out of there, and it's going to be fun. So that being said, going to sit down and talk a lot of stuff here with Kenny Monday, Olympic champion, world champion, four-time world medalist, multiple-time world team member, three-time Olympian. I mean, few Americans have ever made three Olympic teams, and he's a Tulsa, Oklahoma native. We talk about Tulsa. We talk about Oklahoma. Again, we talk about Ray Lewis. We talk about his kids. We talk about a lot of stuff. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the ride. As always, I'd like to thank you for spending your time with me, because you've always got time for Short Time. Now up on the Short Time Wrestling Podcast with one of the legends of American wrestling. It is a pleasure to have this guy on the show, Kenny Monday. Let's even get your title with Spire Institute and Academy before I even introduce what you are and who you do. What is your official title these days?
My title is Director of Wrestling and Head Coach, right? And so I'm kind of got a whole two-part series to it. But it's, yeah, just really, really head coach and just kind of director of wrestling.
So we'll come back to what Spire is, because this is the first time I've had a chance to get you on the show, really ever. We've known each other. We met, I think it was 06 trials is the first time we sat down. And I'm like, that's Kenny Monday. And we're next thing you know, we're sitting there at lunch. And I was running Intermat at the time. And I'm sitting next to Meredith Wilson at USA Wrestling. And John W. Is there, too. And I think you were helping out at Bishop Lynch at the time. And it was just like, so wait, who are you? That's then I said I was with Intermat. And Meredith and John's like, wait, you two get along? It's like, yeah, you know, wrestling people get along, especially in the media. But that was one of my early introductions to you. And then as you do your research and you find out who people are, because again, as we were talking about before I started, I didn't get into wrestling until 95, 96. So it was the end of your international career was really when so I had to do some backtracking as I was covering the sport. And what's impressive is the number of teams, but the era you were in. I mean, there's... Mm-hmm. It's one thing to be great in wrestling, but to do it and get through just to make those teams in American wrestling in that era, that must have been something else.
Yeah, it really was. I mean, it was a great era. Just legends of the sport. You know, I had an opportunity to be coached by some of the legends. You know, with Bobby Douglas and Gable and Wayne, Bill Farrell was around a little bit. You know, he was doing the ASICS thing, but he was around. He was one of the old coaches. He coached those guys. Bill Wick was a fascinating coach. And so we had some really good guys. I think Gene Davis kind of helped out a little bit too. And so those were the guys that, you know, I looked up to. That 72 team was the team that really sparked my interest when it came to the Olympic Games. I was 10 years old in 1972, and I'd been wrestling for 4 years. And was starting to kind of, you know, making my own and really kind of get a name for myself in Oklahoma. But then that 72 team came through, man. And I was, you know, I'm in Tulsa. I grew up in Tulsa. So I'm an hour away from Stillwater. And that's where they were doing the U.S. Open at the time. And so the U.S. Open, which was the federation or whatever. But that's where those Olympians came through there. So I got to watch Jimmy Carr, McTeam, Rick Sanders, Gene Davis, Gable, Wayne Wells, which is, you know, from Oklahoma. And I've been kind of following his career at OU, the Peterson brothers, Chris Taylor. So I got to see these guys compete and get their autographs and get up close and personal with them. And so then when they, you know, went to the Olympic Games, I was all eyes. I was tuned in and to watch that that team have the success they had. Man, that's what I wanted to be. I wanted to, when I saw that, it was a wide world of sports. And I was fascinated by Gable's story, of course. And, but then that was the moment that I was like, okay, this is what I want to do. This is who I want to be. I want to be the best in the world. Cause I didn't even know that there was a possibility of being the best in the world. I was so focused on being the best in the city of Tulsa. I was just trying to be the city champ. But when I saw that, I'm like, man, I could be the best in the world at this sport. And so then that's when my journey started, really.
Well, you kind of talk about it a little bit. There's levels to this, you know, saying what's it like to be just to make the U.S. team. It was a struggle into it itself just to have the chance to be the best in the world. You have to be the best in your country. But going back to be the best in Tulsa was a thing back then. I mean, what's it like wrestling in a place like Oklahoma? I mean, I didn't discover wrestling until late, so I didn't have that experience and what it was like to win, you know, battle for the city youth titles and things like that in a place as wrestling crazy as Oklahoma. So, you know, that upbringing, obviously that's got to guide you in, you know, iron sharpens iron, so to speak, such at an early age. But, you know, how did that shape your entire career?
I mean, it really did. Like I said, I was exposed to greatness early. I was exposed to greatness as a kid. And then, you know, I just saw, you know, I saw the level of competition at that age. And so that really, it made me fall in love with the sport. And then freestyle too. I mean, freestyle, you know, cause when you grow up, I didn't wrestle much freestyle as a kid. I don't think I started wrestling freestyle till I was like maybe in the fifth grade or so. But I was watching freestyle and I was blown away. Just the moves that they were doing and how physical it was. And it was like a totally different, almost a different sport. But that really kind of just shaped me. And then at that point, you know, Oklahoma was a hotbed. It was just really a hotbed of wrestling. Myron Roderick was, you know, I came through when Myron was a coach at Oklahoma State. And so I would go down and see the teams. And, you know, I was fascinated by, you know, some of the Japanese wrestlers that he had on those early, those 60, late 60s and early 70s. Well, I think he retired in 70, I think 69 or 70. But I got to go and watch some of those teams, the Myron Rogers team. And then, of course, I had to meet Myron. But I was fascinated with Fujita, and that Japanese guy was amazing. Itaki was amazing. And so I got to kind of see some of those guys as a kid. So just growing up in Oklahoma just really was, I mean, it was, I didn't have to leave the sport. I mean, I'm not the sport. I didn't have to leave the state to get competition. And so it was really, it was just, I mean, 75 clubs to wrestle against. So it was really cool, man. It was really good to grow up in Tulsa. Then, like you said, just to kind of go up through and then to have to wrestle against, and I just was talking to Lee Kemp the other day, but have those guys that I looked up to, and then Dave Schultz, and kind of looked up to. I was a fan before he was my rival. So, you know, I was watching Dave wrestle, you know, before he became my rival. And but those kind of guys, I'm on the shoulder of those guys. You know, when I watched 72, they came, then the next guys came through was Lee Kemp and Chris Taylor and Chris Campbell, you know, and those guys, and Schultz came through. And so it was really those guys that kind of elevated my mindset and elevated my thought process as far as trying to be the best in the world.
You know, you mentioned Chris Campbell, and a lot of people, you know, know him more from his comeback than, than in my era than you know, what he was in his heyday. What was it like to witness his comeback and be there with him as he was sitting there making another run in wrestling terms, a seasoned age?
Yeah, funny story, man, because I watched Chris when he wrestled at University of Iowa, of course, and, you know, I definitely was a fan and watched him win national title. But then it was so funny. It was after 89 when I beat Josiah in the finals. I think a couple of weeks later, I get a call from Chris Campbell. He was so fired up. He goes, "Man, dude, I'm thinking about coming back to wrestle. You got to be fired up, dude." You know. And so he said, "I said, what, really?" Yeah. And he just out of the blue, Chris, you know, called me. And so, And then so he said, "Yeah, I'm gonna come train. Where are you?" And I'm in Stillwater. And so he came to Stillwater to train. And so I got to really actually work out with Chris a lot. From, you know, like 90 and then 90 through 92, you know, we worked out a lot. And I'd go out to New York and work with him, and he'd come to Stillwater. And we kind of collaborated on that whole comeback that he had. But it was really, for me, of course, it was fascinating to even work with him. And he was a big guy. He was 98 pounder, but I could still roll with him, right? And so that was really cool, man, to have him come back and train with us.
When we look at your career, I mean, you spanned some generational teams there. You know, you talked about having watched the 72 team, and now we get to your current coaching level, the kids that you're getting through. Yeah, they know your name, but they didn't have the opportunity to watch you compete because they weren't born yet. So you've got to kind of, you know, is that something you have to do? Introduce yourself in terms of the internet. I don't mean it like that, but it's like, hey, this, and then they have to YouTube you or something. But like, because you had a chance to see him, and then you watch him on TV. That generation that would have seen you on TV is my age now, and we're long since competing. So I'm in my early 40s. So you've got to teach a generation of kids here that are, you know, Cale Sanderson was winning a fourth title as they were being born in this era. So, you know, you've got to introduce yourself and your, I don't want to say your abilities, cause that's pretty easy. Yeah. How do you do that to this generation of kids?
Yeah. So it's so funny. Cause you know, I'm kind of a humble guy, right? So I'm not the guy that's going to like be tooting my own horn a whole lot, but I had to introduce myself to my own kids.
Well, that was going to be my next question, but go ahead.
They didn't know who I was growing up. I remember one time we were somewhere in the tournament. The kids were really young and they were wrestling. They just started to wrestle. And so these people kept coming up to me like, "Yeah, get my autographs." And they're looking at me like, "Who are you? Who are you?" So they was really kind of blown away that the people that were coming up to me like and you know, celebrating my career. Of course, I didn't explain it to them a whole lot when they were 5 and 6 years old, right? But it was so funny to watch their faces when other people reacted to me, and I'm just like their dad, you know. But, so yeah, it's just, you know, it's just different. Like we grew up, of course, we didn't have YouTube, we didn't have Flow Rest, and we didn't have these media outlets that these kids have today. And so, I mean, they can just pick up and, you know, and see any match pretty much from back in the day. So yeah, I think some of it is just kind of show them some videotapes and say, well, yeah, well, you know, here's
what's a videotape, coach?
I know, right? I know. It's non-existent, right? But yeah, so I'd go back and show them, you know, this film of the matches, and kind of when I'm showing them technique, I'm like, oh, here's Soldier. I'm showing you how I do it. Let me show you what I did in my matches. And so, yeah, it's just you kind of have to protect the kids back through the old days. But it's so funny. I was having a camp just last weekend, and so we're talking, and the kids are asking questions. They're like, well, you know, who do you think the best wrestler is now? And who do you, you know, who's your favorite? And until, of course, I'm talking, I brought up Jordan Burroughs' name. So, you know, Jordan Burroughs is one of my favorite wrestlers. And he's one of the guys, you know. And they go, yeah, really. So he's talking, you think you'll beat him? You think you'll beat him in your prime? And of course, that question always comes out. And I said, well, let me just call him and see what he thinks. So I FaceTimed Jordan, right? And he picked up, right? He picked up right away.
Well, when Kenny Monday calls, you answer. I don't care how old you are or how great you are.
Jordan, Jordan's got a big deal. Yeah, he's got a big deal.
But, he's KOBD, yeah.
Yeah. But he picked up, and so it was so funny. He had his kids there, and so he talked to the kids and the whole thing. So it was a pretty cool moment.
Yeah, and it's funny. I just remember a story Reese Humphrey was telling me one time about, you know, when he started wrestling, and his dad, Jim, never had anything really wrestling stuff around the house. He goes, yeah, I'm starting wrestling. He goes, yeah, that's great, Dad. You're great at pull-ups, but what do you know about wrestling? And then all of a sudden, oh, wait, Dad was pretty good. Yeah. So, introducing the kids to wrestling was probably something that was going to happen with Quincy and Kennedy. But when did they really kind of realize that, you know, okay, the autographs, but wait, we might want to listen to what Dad's talking about here.
Yeah, I just think the older they got, the more they kind of sunk in, you know, a little bit, and they would come back and we'd talk about it, you know, like, so Dad, you know. So they asked me about you know, my matches and some of my career, some of the things that I did. So I just kind of, every year, it just kind of, as they got older, it kind of sunk in a little bit better, you know, and then kind of just, of course, now I'm coaching them, and, you know, I pretty much, you know, guided the careers going early. So I think as time went on, you know, just kind of, they found out more about it, and they get to watch some of my tapes, and, I mean, not tapes, but some of my matches and that kind of thing. So I just kind of built as we went, right? And they're still kind of, you know, listening halfway, right? So they listen about 80%. Yeah. The other part is Dad, right?
Well, if I can get my kids to listen about 80%, I'd consider that a success. Well, one thing that's also unique is, unique at talking about, you know, Reese and Jim, and then, you know, obviously John and, you know, the Smith kids, and, you know, growing up in Stillwater, where you raised your kids and wrestled, you know, Texas, non-traditional wrestling state, a lot of untapped talent down there. Then, right, you know, right. North Carolina, a lot of college wrestling teams in North Carolina, a lot of wrestling in North Carolina, but they're not like Oklahoma. So, you know, I'd heard stories about when Joseph would be wrestling, and that they'd say, John Smith's son's wrestling. So how did you deal with maybe that pressure of being, you know, one of the goats as a wrestler, and then having your kids out there knowing that just the presence of your name is going to bring a little bit of added pressure to them? How did you work that with them?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just you just take it for what it is, you know, just don't put too much pressure on them. Let them know that, you know, just your own journey. It's so funny. I think it was Kennedy's first tournament. I think he was like 6 years old, or whatever. I got him to this tournament. He was kind of, you know, having a good tournament, going through kids. He was winning his matches, and then he made it to the finals, right? But I had noticed a kid that was in his weight class. It was coming through, right? And so I knew who he had in the finals. I watched the kid. And the kid was pretty salty. You know, he had been wrestling probably 3 years. Right, he had some experience. Strong kid. So I knew Kennedy wasn't going to get past this kid, right? I really, you know, kid just was more experienced, right? And so Kennedy gets to the finals, wrestles the kid, and then the kid pins Kennedy, and right, so Kennedy comes out, he's upset, he's kind of disappointed about the match. But the dad on the other side was like lifting the kid up over his shoulders, and he's like celebrating. They really, I mean, he was just pumped up, right? He goes, do you know who you just beat? Do you know who you just beat? He's telling his kid, do you know who you just beat? you just beat Olympic champion, son. I'm like, oh crap, here we go.
Sir, that doesn't mean you get the medal. That doesn't work like that.
Right. And so that was kind of the beginning of that whole deal. But, you know, I think it's just, you know, as we went along, you know, and the kids, we kind of feel it a little bit. I'm like, look, guys, you know, I mean, it is what it is, right? I am who I am. Would you want it the other, any other way? Like, no. We appreciate you being another champion, that whole thing. And so, yeah, so that's just kind of the territory, just kind of, you know, the life we live. That's just kind of where we are. And we just kind of learned to live with it. But you know, I think as we went on, you know, again, I just kind of explained to them, man, the pressure comes from other people, right? I mean, it doesn't really come. It's not coming from me. We got a standard. There's a standard that you know, I want you guys to compete at and train at. There's a standard because I only really know one way to train, and that's to be at your best. And so that's the way my expectation is that. But still, it's your own career. It's your own. I don't expect you to be Olympic champ, right? I just expect you to do the best you can and work hard. But I can show you all the technique in the world, and but I can't wrestle for you, right? And I just can't do the work. Like you've got to do the work. And so I just explain that to a man and let him know that. You know, end of the day, as long as you're doing your best, as long as you're preparing, you know, then I'll be happy. Really, it's about your career.
You know, another thing about wrestlers is when you know there's an older brother that's established, and when the younger brother comes through, it's all of a sudden there's the added pressure here. Now, factor that with a move to a different state. I gotta wonder. This high school wrestling coach in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, has got to be like, oh, are you kidding me? Explain how you got Quincy to adapt to wrestle, how you end up choosing the high school where you guys were going to live and be like, all right, we're not in Texas anymore. We're in North Carolina.
Right. Well, it happened a couple of times. Like when Kennedy was a freshman, we moved to Florida and I took a job after the Olympic Games in 2012. I coached Coleman. I got a really, really nice offer to go coach the Black Zillions in Florida. And they came out to me and, you know, they offered a lot of money, kind of made me an offer I couldn't refuse. And so we moved to Florida.
And for those unfamiliar, that was a, you know, MMA group.
MMA group. Fought
out of there. Yeah.
MMA group. Uzman was on the team, you know, the champ now. He was on the team. Who else was on it? Vitor Belfort, Anthony Johnson, Gilbert Burns was on the team. He just fought the other night. So it was a great team. But we went to Florida, and Kennedy was a freshman. No, he was a sophomore, and we went to Cardinal Gibbons, and then so we end up beating Lake Highland Prep, which I mean they're a really nice school in Florida. Mm-hmm. I mean they won probably five or six in a row. We beat them that year at one state in Cardinal Gibbons, right? And so that was really it was kind of out of the blue. I just showed up. And was looking for a school to put Kennedy in high school. Quincy was still young, middle school, and we called the coach up. Hey, we're moving to Florida. I think we're coming to your school. And so he was really excited about us coming to Florida. And so we beat Lake Highland Prep, and then we moved to North Carolina. I took the job at RTC coaching with Coleman in North Carolina, UNC. It was the same thing. We were looking for we were looking for a house, and so I didn't really know what school they were going to. And so we found the house, and then we just happened to be in the school district. So I called the coach and said, hey, we just got this house and we're in your district. And so we're coming to your school. He was pretty excited. And we won state. We won state for the first time ever. That high school won state in North Carolina with Quincy. That was the first time that they had ever won. And so, yeah, so Quincy was a state champion. He was two-time state champion in Texas. And two-time state champion in North Carolina.
You cover wrestling so much and you see people that move around and
right.
I mean, the odds of just the name, it's, I mean, your kids could have been, you know, third or fourth in state, never gone to NCAA tournament. And that would still been a boon for Kenny Mondays. you're still carrying that reputation around now, with the coaching aspect of it. What you're doing now at Spire, explain what that is and how that's different from what you've done at the college level and the RTC level.
Wow. You know, well, it's a prep school. It's a boarding school in Geneva, Ohio, and brand new program. They just decided to start a wrestling program. And I came in contact, you know, Ray Lewis was the one that kind of brought it to my attention. and Ray Lewis had
he met name drop. Just name drop Ray Lewis right there. Go for it.
Well, that's the truth. That's the truth. So Ray Lewis, you know, he was he's a two-time state champion in wrestling in Florida. But so he met the owner, and they both lived in Baltimore. And Ray called me up and said, "Kenny, I got an opportunity for you. I think you want to look. You should take a look at it." And so I took a look at it, man, and came out and saw what the vision was for the prep school. And it's really a fascinating concept that they have. And it's a boarding school, but it's 9th through 12th grade. We got basketball. I mean, LaMelo Ball came here his senior year to play. You know, the guy, he plays for the Charlotte Hornets now.
I think everybody in the world of sports knows the last name Ball.
Yeah. So he came here to play his senior year in high school, or it might have been his postgrad year.
Conversation with his dad and you were a lot different when you called that respective coach. <That's
right. laughs> Yep. And so we got basketball, we've got track and field, we got swimming, we've got just hired a girls basketball coach. Candace Wiggins, and she played in WNBA.
Yeah, name sounds familiar.
And then, yep, Candace Wiggins. And then we started a lacrosse program. And so, yeah, so I'm just a head coach, man, starting a new brand new program. And it's different just because it's a different level. It's high school. I haven't coached high school since Bishop Lisher days back in the 2000s. You know, so it's been a while being on this level. I've been coaching, you know, senior level athletes for the last 10 years. And so it's different. But again, it's still wrestling. Right. Still wrestling. And I think what kind of really piqued my interest is, you know, the boys are pretty much on their way. You know, Quincy's got one more year left and Princeton. And so they're grown men, man. They're young men on their way. And so I just feel like it's an opportunity for me to get back and give back to the sport and really start working with younger kids on this level and try to get those kids ready for college. Because there's a gap. There's some work to do that we have as a country and on this level. So I just thought, you know, just an opportunity for me to go back and kind of reinvest in these kids and really try to build a program. That was a challenge, really, to build a brand new program from scratch and just build it, you know, just kind of see what I could do with it. It was a huge challenge, you know, a huge challenge. And so I love a challenge. I'm never afraid of a challenge. I'm never afraid for something new. So I'm really excited about the opportunity to do this.
Yeah, and geographically, Geneva's basically, if you look at the map, it's between Cleveland, Ohio, and Erie, Pennsylvania. So it's in that northeast Ohio corridor. It's not exactly in Cleveland proper, so it's not like you're going to get the neighborhood kids that are pretty that are scrapping, you know, with St. Ed's. Yep. But this is...
We're about 50 minutes from Cleveland, and we're right off the lake, right off the Lake Erie. And I got some kids from Erie, PA, coming down to get some work in, too. So, but yeah, it's a hotbed. I mean, Ohio's a hotbed of wrestling. It really is, you know, it's Pennsylvania, Ohio. I think, you know, now they're probably the hottest states in wrestling right now.
When you look at the type of competition now, you know, how do you build a program at a school like this? First of all, the obvious questions, who are you competing against? Where are the postseasons? Those type of things pop up. And then there's the, you know, people like to look at the private schools and be like, hey, well, they have an unfair advantage, blah, 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 non-boundary schools. So what are some of those things that you have to navigate and explain to potential parents that are saying, hey, my kid, I think wants next level. We're interested in this type of education. You know, what type of question, you know, when it comes to answering those questions, what do you say?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just another option to give to your kids. I mean, these kids these days are coming up with a lot of them are really specific about their sport, right? And they're kind of isolating one sport and they're really serious about it. There's a lot of kids that are just serious about being good in the sport and they're dedicated. And so it's just another way to navigate your kid's career. Again, we're building a program we'll compete at Prep Nationals. We'll compete with some of those prep schools along the way and just trying to really, man, I'm selling the dream, man. Kids that really want to be great. I'm living a dream as an Olympic champ and the platform it's given me has just been amazing. And so I'm just selling the dream. I think it kind of reminds me of what I think the vision is to kind of make it like almost like an Olympic training center. And I would just remember my first time going to the Olympic training center in Colorado Springs. I just made the Olympic team. And so when I got there, I was fascinated just because all the other sports were there. I mean, Roy Jones was there, the boxing team was there. We had swimmers, we had basketball players, we had cyclists, we had rowers. And so all the other sports were there training, and it was just athletes. And so I would see some of these athletes in the cafeteria, get to talk to them, got to meet them, got to hang out with them and kind of hear their stories and their vision and what they did, their training methods. And so it was really, I was really fascinated. It was kind of, to me, it was like a sacred ground of just athletes just really trying to, and everybody had the same goal. You know, everybody there, their goal was to be the Olympic champion. And so that was like, that was just fascinating to me. I'd never been in that type of environment. And so my vision had always been, even coming out of college, to be able to work in an environment where I could build an athlete and just kind of take him through the stages, take him through the levels of the sport, you know, from high school to college to international wrestling, and always have a home for them to come and train. And so when I grew up, there was like, and I was always curious about how karate schools work. You know, these karate schools, they were on every corner, and they were very, these guys ran businesses for years, and very successful businesses. You know, but I knew wrestling was a martial art. And so I was always curious why come wrestling couldn't, you know, duplicate that model as the Taekwondo schools. I knew wrestling was a very effective martial art. And so that was kind of my vision coming out of college. Man, I want to start an academy of wrestling and just teach kids how to wrestle, you know, educate them, you know, get them to the next level and, you know, send them out in the world. And so this is kind of along those lines. So even back then, I kind of had a vision of what we're doing now, just building an environment where kids can come here and they get serious about their sport. And I can just teach them how to be champions, man. Just give them that opportunity to go and train and get specific training, be in this type of environment, and then just get to that next level. And then even after college, you know, eventually what we have a 9th through 12th high school program, right? Then we also have a post-grad program. So it's kind of like that gap year. So the kids aren't quite ready to go to college and they need that another year of maturity, another year of training. We've got a program for them here at Aspire. So the post-grad program is available. Then also I want to add an RTC program later, you know, down the line. So, you know, guys that are training or guys and girls that are training to make the Olympic team, they can come here to train. So that's kind of the vision. Then we also, you know, we got U23s, the World Team Trials coming in June that we're hosting. And this our facility, I mean, it's an amazing facility. It really is. It's really, I've been all over the world and saw different training facilities and different sport training facilities, but I never have I ever seen a training facility like we have here at Aspire. And so, I mean, sky's the limit of what you can achieve here.
Yeah, I first heard about it a couple of years ago when I think it was Kent State, Cleveland State, and some of the schools. They had, it was like a small college tournament, or if it was a dual thing. I just remember it's like at Spire, like what the heck is Spire? I just right. I had no idea, and then all of a sudden, boom, Kenny Monday. I was like, okay, people are going to know what Spire is from here on out. That's for exactly. that's for sure. But it seems like they dip their toe in the wrestling waters before they actually. Right. Dove all in. So, what the leadership's like and the type of education that's offered there that makes this attractive beyond the wrestling side of things.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's probably the reason I'm here. I mean, of course, Ray Lewis, you know, I met Ray Lewis back in 2013 while I was in Florida. That's a funny story. I don't know if you ever heard that story, but
I got time. Go for it.
Yeah.
I'm not a Ravens fan, but he doesn't know that.
So check this out. So I'm, after practice, MMA practice, I go to wash my car. I had the next day off, so I had a little time off. It was a beautiful day. Took my car down to the car wash, which is only like two blocks down from the gym in Boca Raton. And then so I go to the car wash, turn my car in. So I'm coming out, and I see this white, beautiful white Rolls Royce. Oh, man, that's a beautiful car. I wonder whose that is, right? So I turn around, and then, you know, they have the benches over there where you can wait on your car to come through. And I look over there, and I'm by myself. I look over there, and goes, man, there's Ray Lewis. And so Ray was sitting over at the bench, right? And I had never met him before. He had just retired. This is 2013. He had just retired. And I was like, man, I'm trying to talk myself into going over because I didn't really want to bother him. But then
You're an Olympic champ, and you're sitting there trying not to make it weird.
That's right. But you, I didn't want to act like I was a fanboy, you know. So I was like trying to be cool. But then I'm like, nah, I'm gonna go over and introduce myself. So I go over there and say, hey, Ray, how you doing, man? I'm Kenny Monday. Big fan, man. Been watching your career. You know, big fan, man. I love you. I love the way you play the game. And he goes, Kenny Monday. I go, yeah, Kenny Monday. He said, the wrestler, Kenny Monday? I go, yeah. He jumps up, man. He gives me a hug. He goes, man, you my boy. You my hero. I'm like, well, yeah, what are you talking about, man? He goes, man, when I was in high school, my coach was showing me your videotapes and talking about you and saying how bad you was and you need to wrestle like Kenny Monday and da da da. I'm like, really? And so I remember I was getting ready for the 92 Olympic Games, right? This is back, I was training, serious training. And I was getting ready for the trials. And so I remember a coach from Florida calls me up and he goes, yeah, my name is, I forget the guy's name. I'm from Florida and high school coach. And man, I got this really, really good football player, but he's wrestling for me. And I think he can win state. I've been showing him your tapes. And he goes, you know, think you can come out and work with him and do a clinic here and work with him a little bit? And I go, man, I'm so busy. I'm getting ready for the trials. I really would, you know, but maybe after the Olympic Games are over, I'll come back, whatever. He goes, okay, man. He said, well, I'm going to keep showing him your tapes and good luck in the trials, da da da. And that kid he was talking about was Ray Lewis. And right. So of course he was with Ray Lewis then. And so I'm like, but he just, that's who it was. And so all those years went by. And then that's when I met him, right? So that was Ray Lewis he was talking about. And he was a two-time state champ in Florida, right? So that's where that came from. Where he's like, you're my hero, right? That whole thing. And so that was so cool that's how it happened.
That is great. You have one, the fact that you just see Ray Lewis sitting there getting his car washed. Only thing I can think of is there's a haircut place right, like literally right, like two minutes, 3 minutes from my house that a lot of the Timberwolves hit up. So on the right day, if I'm like, I'm losing my hair, so I don't really need to hear that. But if I go on the right day, I could probably see Karl Anthony Towns in there or something.
Check this out though. So after we met, right? So we exchanged numbers. I said, man, my gym is right down the street. He goes, man, I miss wrestling. I kind of want to get back into it. I'm like, well, come on down to the gym and roll around a little bit. And so I didn't think he was coming, right? I didn't think he was going to. So we say, I didn't think he was going to come. That next week, he showed up because we had wrestling on Tuesdays and Thursdays. That next Tuesday, he showed up at practice, right? Brought his wrestling shoes.
How old were those things?
No, they weren't old. He had some shoes. Yeah, he must have bought some shoes or whatever. You know, they weren't old. But dude wanted to roll. He wanted to wrestle. He's like, all right, man, come on, let's get on the mat a little bit. Yeah, so we wrestled for about 15, 20 minutes.
So how big is Ray right now? How big is Ray post-retirement?
Ray's probably about 230, probably 235, 240 probably. And he's good size. And dude is strong, man. So we rolled for about 15 minutes. And he had some skills. And he was trying to get me too. Ray was trying to take me down. He was like going live, and he ain't gonna take down.
I mean,
he went for about 15 minutes.
You get a chance. You get one shot in Olympic champ. Right. I mean, I think Novogratz is still talking about foot sweeping Kendall at the Olympics in 2012. But
now I was about to give him a takedown. He went for about 15 seconds.
15 like, minutes. Nah,
it was cool, man. But I could tell he had some wrestling. He had some wrestling skills for sure.
Yeah, because there's also that video that circulated from the Ravens locker room where he was reffing. I think it was Kelly Gregg and Art Jones, who's Jones's brother. Yep. And he's calling out moves like, no, he's calling. It's right. Clearly he wrestled here. A lot of people are like, this guy knows wrestling. He's like, yeah,
he
Ray
knows
wrestled.
He knows what he's doing for sure. Absolutely.
So you told me that story to tell this story.
and the story is, because he met the owner. And so the owner is just like, you know, he's a developer. Yeah, we're building a hotel on property, building a Marriott. Yep, right on property, right in the front of part of our building with a Starbucks. And he's just a really a fascinating guy, and you just got to look him up. His name is Jonathan Ehrenfeld, but just a smart guy, and got a huge vision for this place. And he kind of just kind of fell upon it. Right, it was previous owner had it. And he kind of wanted to sell it, and Jonathan, you know, found it and bought it, and so now he's got a whole different vision for I mean, it's going to be like, it's really going to be like an Olympic training center. It really is. I mean, he's building hotel. He got two hotels. He's building. He's building maybe a mini little golf course. And we're going to build these programs. You know, the basketball program is probably the most kids in the basketball program right now. But swimming is on the rise. Track and field is going to be great. Got great coaches there. And then lacrosse, starting a lacrosse program. And what I love is that everybody's supporting one another. Everybody's backing one another. And we had and the guys like the guys at the administrators. A lot of those guys came from the IMG program. You know the IMG program.
Yeah. I was actually going to bring that up. How similar is it to IMG Academy?
Yeah. And that's kind of the model that these guys are working under. And so they are really serious about building the business and making sure that we develop this academy. But the academics is really good. I mean, I think it's really about the teachers here are really, really. And they're different. It's just because they understand sports, they understand the rigors of sport, and so they're not working against the student athletes. I mean, they're actually working with them. They're not giving them anything. You know, like it's not easy, but they are really preparing them. We have a performance coach. We have a strength and conditioning coach that's outstanding. He's really, really good, and we have a mental coach. And so we're trying to hit all angles that really prepares these kids for the next level. We have a great social media guy that's really kind of showing and teaching kids how to conduct interviews and how to deal with the press and how to do their social media. Of course, with this whole NIL deal, so they're really trying to hit those angles as well and try to build value for these kids. So my objective, of course, is to send kids off to college prepared academically. So when it comes time for them to make a choice to go to college, whether they're going to Ivy League school, whether they're going to Oklahoma State, wherever they want to go, they've got a choice to make that decision. And so it's not like, I wanted to go to Harvard, but I couldn't get in, or I didn't have the grades. I wanted to go to Princeton, but I couldn't get in. I want them to be well prepared when it comes time for them to make a choice going to college and where they want to go. And so that's my focus. Of course, I've been in the game for, over 50 years. 50, almost 60 years, 50 years, 55, I would say. So I got
Don't date yourself too much.
I'm 60, man. I'm 60 years old. And I'm proud of it. I still roll around. I can still beat most of the kids in the room. I'm proud of that, man. But I've got the blueprint. I've got the blueprint. I've had kids that wrestled, of course, he's got one more year at Princeton. And I understand this game. I understand how to get better. I understand, how to manage a kid's career. And so that's the education that I'm getting these kids and their parents with, just trying to educate them on the sport of wrestling and in sport and getting ready to prepare these kids for college.
Well, that's one thing I've seen, even just from a distance, you're walking the walk with that because you've got two kids that got into two very academically challenging place. It is not easy to get into the University of North Carolina. It is definitely not easy to get into Princeton.
It's a great school.
You've got two kids that have performed at the highest level at, esteemed academic institutions.
Right.
Now, I'm curious when does Quincy to get into your kids here, because this is also what intrigues me is when does he tell you, Dad, I'm thinking Ivy League?
Quincy's always been, a great student, and it kind of started by, I think our daughter, Sydney, Sydney's 27 years old and she's a children's book editor with Penguin Random House. And so she's really probably the smartest.
I need to get her on the show because that is awesome too.
Sydney is awesome. Sydney graduated in three years from high school. She went to Italy for a culture exchange year. Spent a year in Italy at 16, 17 years old. Because she had that gap year, then she graduated from Howard University. And so she's really doing well in her career in New York. So it kind of started with her and she was a great big sister, kind of brought these kids up. And Quincy was just a great reader coming up and Kennedy was too. And so my vision, my wife, Sabrina, she's a Mary Kay director that she's really successful in her own right. And so we kind of,
she drive the pink Cadillac.
She does.
Do you ever drive the pink Cadillac?
I do.
Because Cody Bickley doesn't want to drive his pink Cadillac.
I drove it today. I would drive it any day of the week. It's an Escalade. Pink Escalade is, it's a beautiful car. No, I don't have a problem driving pink at all. Anybody that knows me will tell you. Well, my wife has been, she's been in Mary Kay for 30 years. She's a national sales director. Kind of the highest she can go, and she drives a pink Escalade, and I would drive it any day of the week. Anybody that knows me will tell you. But our whole vision for our kids was just to, especially the boys coming out of wrestling, was just to make sure that they had a choice in where they wanted to go to school, right? Whether they wanted to go to Ivy League, or I didn't want anything to be off the table, you know. And they could have went to Oklahoma State, they could have went to, you know, OU or one of the big schools, or wherever they wanted to go, they could have gone. But when Quincy was coming through, you know, I knew he was very serious about his studies. And, when they started recruiting him, the one thing that really kind of made me give my blessings for Princeton was that the coaching staff, I mean, those guys are really good. And Harris are really good. Joe Dubuque, Nate Jackson, those guys are great. I mean, those guys are good coaches, but what I saw Kolasek. All-American, right? And, you know, Kolasek, right? So he All-American at Princeton. And so I was like, okay, if he can All-American Quincy, you can go to Princeton and win, right? Because he wanted to wrestle, he wanted to win. So he wanted to go somewhere we could win. And that kind of showed me that those guys were serious. It wasn't just about academics. I mean, they wanted to win. And so I said, when I saw Kolasek was All-American, I'm like, Quincy, you can be a national champion and go to Princeton. Right, these guys are doing the right thing. They want to win. It's not just about, you know, they're not making excuses because you're at Princeton and Ivy League. They still want to win, right? And they're going to prepare you to win. So when I saw that, I'm like, yeah, man, you can win there. You can go to Princeton and win, right? Because I knew that he didn't want to turn down an opportunity to go to Princeton when they recruited him, and then they knew he could get in. It came down between UNC and Princeton. And as much as I wanted him at UNC because I was there. When he got in and we got accepted, I'm like, man, he's like, I just don't want to turn down an opportunity to go to Princeton. And I agree. My wife and I, we agree with it. And, but he wouldn't have been happy just going to Princeton, right? He wanted to win. And so as long as they were doing the right things within the coaching staff and in the practice room, I knew he could be successful.
And looking at it in the finals, because you wrestled in the finals on three occasions in college, two of those you came up short. So I'm curious on the dad mode, the coach mode, and the elite dad mode. There's three different conversations, you could have had. Yeah. What was the conversation like when Quincy finally came back and you had a chance to kind of sit with him for a bit?
Yeah. It never changed. You know what I mean? From the time we went to Tulsa Nationals, it never really changed as far as your preparation, you know, and knowing and believing in yourself and knowing that you're good enough to win. But that moment, you know, I can remember back when they were even high school, and I would give them visuals, right? My thing was like, you got to see it before you can be it, right? It's always been one of my sayings. So I would send them a picture when they got to college, a picture of that finals match. Right. You know, the mat where it has the NCAA mat, that beautiful mat. And it's like, you know, it's all lit up and just a mat by itself. And so I would send them pictures of that. Right. And that's the moment you want to be in. You want to be in that final mat, that match, you know, and that's the finals. And so that's kind of the vision that I always got to put before them. And, I think it was just, you know, of course, when he went through as a freshman, he was sick. The week before the tournament, he got sick. I mean, he got really sick. So he really didn't have a good tournament. He showed up sick and never quite got his legs under him. So then the next year, his sophomore year, had a great season. I think going into the season, or going to the NCAA tournament, he was ranked, I think he was fifth.
Yeah, he's a five seed. Year.
Yep, he was fifth seed. And then, you know, of course, you know, a week before COVID, they shut down. A week before NCAAs, they shut down. It was really heartbreaking for us because that was the first time that him and Kennedy would have been able to compete in the NCAA tournament together. Mm-hmm. And Kennedy had, I think he had Joseph, Penn State kid, first match. And so we were excited about that. We had a great game plan for him, and we were really excited about that. And but they shut him down. And so that was really heartbreaking. So, and then, of course, last year, they didn't have a season. Ivy's didn't because of COVID. And, well, yeah, because they didn't have a season. So we pulled Quincy out of school because we didn't want him to lose that year, because in Princeton, they don't redshirt. And it's got to go straight 4 years. And so if you're in school, and you gotta finish straight four. So we pulled him out of school and just brought him home to Chapel Hill. And so I trained him that whole year. Because I was training Jordan Oliver for the Olympic trials. And so him and Jordan worked out. And so Quincy was Jordan's best workout partner. I mean, they probably his, you know, more consistent workout partner. So him and Jordan just worked out all year. And so that really was a good year for me to really spend some time with him and really train him. And so this year, it was just about, man, there was kind of their motto, unfinished business. And I was like, man, you just don't want to take this for granted, right? Because we know what happened, you know, and you just got to live every day, you know, to the fullest and make sure that, you know, because you never know what could happen in the future. You may not have another opportunity to win a national title. So just take it one match at a time and believe that you can win. And that's kind of how he approached it, you know. Quincy's a different kind of kid, man. He doesn't ever get too high or too low. He kind of stays even. And he doesn't get rattled. He's not going to really beat himself. He's you got to beat him, you know. So it's I knew he was poised enough to get it done and give his best performance. But it's still nerve wracking, of course, to watch your kids wrestle. You know, it's still nerve wracking for sure. But it's more so than it is when I wrestle, because when I wrestle, you know, of course I can control what I do out there. For them, I can't wrestle for them. I can't control it. So it's kind of a little nerve wracking.
One of the cool things the NCAA has done in recent years is they've given a spot, four seats for family to be right there mat side, because recent memory, Tony Ramos just trying to scale the railing. Your inner Sandy is yelling, don't climb over that railing, trying to get to his family, wherever they're sitting. Now they bring you mat side, and you got an opportunity to sit there and watch your son NCAA Finals mat side. There's the opportunity to be that close, but you know, is it kind of a double-edged sword? You know, when the unfortunate loss happens, you're like,
yeah,
okay, right. we can't just cover our head
can't
here.
Hide,
we're in front of everybody. I mean, first of all, what's that experience like as a parent? Just to witness that close your kid in the NCAA Finals.
Yeah, well, it's beautiful, because I saw other families doing that. Right? I knew that was an opportunity. Once they made the finals, that they would invite the parents down mat side, and so it was kind of a decision for sure, right? For one, you know, watching Quincy up in our seats, right, mm-hmm. watching him go through the tournament match by match, and then making it. You kind of want to, you know, I'm kind of a guy where I kind of. If it's working, I kind of stay with it, right? And so I was like, part of me was like, I just want to kind of stay right here, because he's been winning in these seats and we've been celebrating right here in these seats. I don't know if I want to change. And so it's so funny, because, you know, Pat Glory's parents was sitting right next to us. We're in the same row. And so we kind of had the discussion of, are you going down? Are you going down? What do you think? You going down? And so we're both was kind of like, I don't know if I'm going to go down. I don't know if I want to go down, right? And but then, you know, of course, you know, you don't get that opportunity. You don't get that opportunity to go down and watch, be right there for your kid and watch him right there. I mean, that's the best seat in the house anyway, right? It's a great seat. And who wouldn't want that seat, right? But, yeah, it was a decision. We decided to go down and support him. And it really, you know, of course, he said, after the match, Chris said, man, I'm glad you guys came down to support me, right? So it was really the best thing to do, right? But then, again, part of me was like, I didn't want to, be mat side where he can kind of see me and kind of have a, you know, a feeling about, you know, me being so close and me screaming. Cause I know I'm screaming, right. But I didn't want to out scream his coaches, cause they're coaching them. They, you know, they got a whole thing they got, the routine they have. And so I kind of had to bite my lip a little time, you know, a couple times where, you know, especially when he got that last sequence that ended up losing for him. I'm screaming. It should have been stalemate. Right? So, so that was kind of a tough deal, but I'm glad we got to do it. He was glad we got to do it, man. I mean, that's a moment in life and a moment in history that you never know if you get it again. And And so we were actually glad to be there. Of course, the whole family was there. My daughter was there. Kenny was there. And so it was really, really fun to watch it, you know. Because, of course, me, you know, I'm thinking the opposite. I'm thinking we're going to celebrate right there after he wins, right? So I never thought he wasn't going to win. I never thought he wasn't going to win. And I believed in him, right? I believe he can get it done.
Naturally. Now, a couple things. One, how many kids or how many of your teammates have kids named Sydney from 96 or have kids named Sydney from the Olympic years? That's one thing I'm wondering.
Brand's got a kid.
Yeah, Brand's and Slay both have Sydney. So you got a Sydney. Yep. And,
after me, right?
Hey, you're the trendsetter. Now, right. You brought her up and then you talked about going to Howard and HBCU. Great. Yep. You know, that's when you talk about legendary and you know, storied HBCUs. Howard is one of them. We actually have got a new HBCU wrestling program that's going to start up at Morgan State.
Right. Yep.
The opportunity here, and this is something that, you know, you touch on about the minority athlete, the African-American wrestler, that the opportunities are gone right now. Granted, Morgan State's coming back. Bluefield State is a Division II school in West Virginia, yet it's kind of an HBCU in name only right now. They're trying to bring sports back to the campus to bring it back to its former stature. And then Allen University, a Division II school, has it. Arkansas Baptist is transitioning from the junior college to the NAIA. So the HBCU options for about, I guess, from 2009 when Delaware State dropped to now Morgan State will be Division I. There's going to be, you know, a 20-something year gap here, or almost a 20-year gap. And as a black wrestler, as somebody who came through an era where you had a few more options, but they weren't you were not going to go to an HBCU D1 program back. They weren't there at the level. Morgan State was probably the star team back then as a Division II school. The opportunity your daughter had to go to Howard. What does that mean for you as a parent? And what will the Morgan State opportunity, you think, mean for other parents like you that want to send their kids and have that HBCU experience?
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think it was a great experience for her. Of course, my wife, Sabrina, she graduated from HBCU. She graduated from Tennessee State. Mm-hmm. And so she had that
home of the Tiger Bells.
Yep. And so she graduated from there. And but I remember back, you know, watching wrestling when Morgan State had a program and Howard had a program and guys going to those programs. A couple guys from my hometown went to Howard and when they had a program. And a couple guys went to Morgan State. And I'll never forget the coach that was at Morgan State. That he always wore the little tiger.
Jim vest. Phillips was his name.
Yeah. So I was always fascinated by him. But it was just an incredible opportunity. I mean, Sydney, she had a full ride to Howard University, academic full ride. But she was accepted to NYU. So it really came down between NYU and Howard. And I remember taking her on her campus visit to NYU. And I really thought she was going to go to NYU for a while. Because he was right there in the city, and she loved New York. And so we thought about it. But then when it came down to it, you know, it was the HBCU experience that she was wanted to go through. So she ended up going to Howard for school. But, yeah, it's a great, great experience, great environment. I would have loved to have done that. I always after college, I was like, man, I wish I could go back and then go to an HBCU and experience that, right? It's so rich in culture. It was so cool. We were just in, you know, they had the All-Star game here in Cleveland. And so one of the nights they had a HBCU basketball game. They had Morgan State and Howard playing at the basketball game down in Cleveland. So me and my wife went down there and watched the game. It was so much fun, man, and watching the band, you know, battle and that whole thing. And it was so cool. And I'm so happy that Morgan State, you know, was coming back and giving these guys an opportunity to wrestle. And of course, you know, growing up in Oklahoma, you know, we really had, you know, probably two of the only black teams in the state. And we went through some trials and some tribulations as black teams, you know, going to these 10 tournaments. And it was some of the teams didn't want us there. Some of the parents didn't want us there. And sometimes we'd show up to the tournament and or we wouldn't be in the brackets, right? And we'd enter the bracket and we'd get there and it was like, we're not even in the bracket. Like, well, you can't wrestle, you're not in the bracket. So we would go through those things. And I remember we had, you know, referees would like take matches from us. It's only maybe a couple times I even thought about quitting wrestling. And that was one of them when I was a little kid. And, and the referee was, you know, we gave him some bad calls, getting bad calls here and there. And there's this one moment where I was really had this one kid that was he's kind of a nemesis of mine. He was a pretty child prodigy at that time. He was winning a lot of matches. So I had this one tournament I was really ready for. I was really prepared. I beat this kid. I out-wrestled. I know I out-wrestled him, and I really should have won. And referees took points here, points there, and ended up losing the match. I was so heartbroken. And I was ready to quit the sport because I'm like, man, this has happened 3 or 4 times before. And I'm like, man, this is ridiculous. I don't want to do this. Of course, all my friends were playing basketball. So I was only like, you know, 10 years old. And I was ready to quit. I was ready to quit because I was just like, man, they don't want us here. You know, I mean, they vote, you know, the referees are taking matches. And my dad said, look, man, I know you love the sport. That's not your fight. That's not your fight. Let us handle the politics of this thing. And we'll talk to the administrator. We'll talk to the tournament director. So let us handle that. If you want to wrestle, here's the thing. It just can't be close. Don't take the referees out of the deal. Take the referees out of the equation, and you won't have that problem. And so it just kind of really changed my life, right? So from that point on, I was afraid for the matches to be close. So it really jumped my whole mindset to a whole nother level because I was afraid for the matches to be close. And so I would just come out with so much fire and determination, and it just really changed my life. And I'm sure all my competitors saw it because I was a different kid from that point on. And really it just changed my whole approach to the sport. You know, it really did. Cause I'm like, I refuse to let these guys run me out of the sport. I refuse to let these guys dictate, you know, how I can be in the sport of wrestling. I know I'm good and I'm destined to be great. And I saw it early. And so, yeah, that really kind of changed my whole mindset. And it carried me all the way through to the 88 Olympic trials, wrestling Dave Schultz. Cause you know, Dave was a golden boy, you know, and USA Wrestling, and they kind of were already promoting Dave and Mark. You know, they were defending champions. Of course, they're going to promote these guys, right? I mean, they are our best guys. They're proven. And so I was breaking through. And so, you know, a couple matches before, I thought I had some close calls with some of the referees. And so I remember talking to Tucci before the match. He's like, Tucci, just be fair, man. Just call the match fair. Let us win or lose the matches, right? I know you're getting a lot of pressure, you know, they want these guys on the team, but just be fair, man. And so, but again, wrestling Dave Schultz, I was like, man, it can't be close. These matches can't be close. You go back and watch the trials and they weren't close.
I do want to circle back to the HBCU thing real quick, because one thing, you know, I think the HBCU wrestling, you know, Nate Jackson has been a big part of that with the Black Wrestling Association as well, is the potential. I think they're talking 5 or 6 more schools. And I grew up in southeastern Virginia. So I grew up 10 minutes from Hampton University, 25 minutes from Norfolk State. People don't know this about me. I watch HBCU football quite frequently. I mean, the Bayou Classic was something I didn't miss for years. Classic. So think about this. We put wrestling at Grambling and we put wrestling at Southern. Imagine, and they always play the Bayou Classic during wrestling season, late part of football season. Could you imagine a Bayou Classic wrestling match in the Superdome? Think about that potential right there. How quickly could that grow the sport?
Yeah,
holy crap.
Absolutely, man. I think it's just another opportunity to give these kids an opportunity to go to college, man, and get an education, you know. And then wrestling is really, to me, this is the best time in my lifetime to be a wrestler. It really is. I think just because of the opportunities these young kids have as far as like international wrestling, they have cadet worlds, your junior worlds, all these things. And then, of course, the tournaments. And then I think the sport, the club program has really revolutionized our sport. Cause now you can run a business. You look at Perlers, you look at, you know, all these guys, David Taylor's, the Edge back in the day. I mean, my club program that I used to have, but I mean, now you could actually run a business kind of like that model I was talking about, the karate school. So you could actually run a business now and sustain yourself. So I think it's the best time to be a wrestler. So it's really, you know, having HBCUs is just really kind of, you know, it really kind of gives us more opportunities, more options for these kids to go to college, you know, and then they have that experience at HBCU, which is again, man, I was coming up when I went through through the time, and of course Langston University was right, you know, probably 20 minutes or 25 minutes from Oklahoma State, and so I would always slip down to Langston University, which is HBCU. I would slip down there and hang out with some of the guys and some of the girls down there. It was really, really fun time. My aunt graduated; she was a Langston University graduate. So,
yeah, if you fly into Oklahoma City, if I'm not, it depends on which way you take into Stillwater, you'll pass right by it.
You'll pass.
I remember
right
passing, and I go, "Why don't they have wrestling here?"
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah, you pass right by through Langston. Yeah, so no, I think it's a great thing. I think what Novogratz and those guys are doing, and Nate Jackson and Nate Parker is a big part of that as well. And, no, I think it's going to be great, man. I think it's going to be great. It's going to be great. And hopefully they get a great coach to run that program.
Lastly, before we circle back to Spire, Kennedy's been talking about coming back. How soon do you, we're recording this on Tuesday, April 19th. How soon do you think he's going to make a decision?
Well, you know, I think for Kennedy, man, he took a little break, right? He took a little break, and so he's got to go back. He's got 10 hours to finish his degree at UNC. So he's going to go back and finish his degree this summer. And then once he does that, he'll make a decision on what he wants to do. He's got a year that he can get back, because he missed one year because he had a head injury, right? So he had to sit out a year. So he's got one more year, possibly. He's got to get a medical waiver kind of thing. And so once he clears that waiver, and then he'll be able to pick a school where he wants to go. But he's going to go to grad school. Once he graduates, then he'll go to grad school, and then we'll see where he wants to go. So I'm not for sure where he's going to go. I really don't. Yeah, he's a social media guy, man. He'll be out there, and he'll put some stuff out there just to kind
he's
of,
gonna dangle everything. He's gonna have everybody.
Exactly, right?
I mean, I'm gonna have to. I was like, do I turn on notes? I'm just because I'm curious where he's gonna go. I'm like, you know what? Man, he's gonna just be showing up on my timeline, with little emojis. Yeah, like, what kind of cryptic stuff are you doing? Who inspires teaching him this stuff, man?
He loves to tease people, man. So he really does. I had a guy from Cleveland State call me and say, "Hey, man, what about coming to Cleveland State? He'd be close to you." Like, it's probably just the opposite. He want to be a little further away from me, right? And I'll be in his ear. Now you need to do a little bit more today, right?
Quickly, people on the West Coast are drawing maps going, "We are this far away from your dad."
Right, exactly.
You know, Zeke's probably already done the math on that.
Yep. He's got a call. For sure. So we'll see, man. Hopefully he'll get it. And, you know, I think with Kennedy, at one point he wants to fight. I think he wants to fight MMA. I think he wants to dip his toes in that a little bit. But we'll see. I think Quincy really, really, when his run to the finals, really kind of inspired him. Because that's his little brother, right? And so they work out all the time. Not well all the time, but of course, having Quincy home that whole year, they got to work out more than they ever had. And so it was just when they got to college that they could actually work out together and not get mad at each other and blow the workout, right? So all through growing up, they could work out for about 10 minutes before
brothers will be brothers.
Gone. Exactly. So now they can actually get a productive workout in, right? I've been trying to get them to do that for years, but they can just now, the college years, they can do that. So I think just Quincy's run to the finals, man, in that moment, and Kennedy saw that moment. He goes, "Man, if this, you know, I want to be a part of that. I want to chase that one more time." So that's kind of where he is. So we'll see.
We'll bring up what Spire's looking like here. So here's the website. It's at spireinstitute.org. You click on, we're looking at the academy page, you know, drop down. You can see the academy page where the wrestling is. You go down here, you got league, get all sorts of information. So if you're curious on what Coach Monday is doing here, you can.
I'm telling you right now, we're building a world-class program. I'm going to build a program that will be competing with the top national teams in the country. I've got probably 7 or 8 kids already signed up for next year that's really applied and I'm looking at. My goal is to build a national program where we're competing with the best out there. And again, I'm selling the dream, man. I'm working my butt off to try to build it. So if anybody out there, if you got a kid that's serious about wrestling, serious about their academics, send them to me, you know, and we'll get them going, right? So yeah, I'm on this side of it, man. I want to build champions.
One of the last times I remember you showing up on a podcast was with Richard Immel, and I looked down, that thing was an hour and 45 minutes long, and I can understand why, can talk, because man. There's so much more I want to delve so into much, with man. You. We'll have to do
I can,
it.
I can tell the story, man.
At another time, for sure. Yeah, because Richard's 15 minutes for me now, so
right. Oh, yeah,
what we'll
yeah,
do
yeah.
is we'll get us all together and see if we can break a record for something. But Kenny, it's been great catching up with you. Best of luck to you with what's going on at Spire. And I'll be keeping an eye on it, and best of luck to those Mondays, yeah. Kennedy and Quincy.
Yeah, yeah. And another thing too, man, is of course the NCAA tournament is in Tulsa next year, right? So it's my hometown. All of our kids were born in Tulsa, you know. So it's their hometown, and so my dad is still lives in Tulsa. My family still lives in Tulsa, and so he's so pumped up about it. He's so excited that he didn't have to go anywhere to watch the NCAA tournament. It's like. It's like 5 minutes from his house. He lives like 5-10 minutes from downtown. My dad lives outside of Tulsa, right? And so we're so excited to bring the NCAA tournament to Tulsa, man. He's never been there, and we're just pumped. And so for the boys to be able to, because they missed that opportunity to wrestle together in the NCAA tournament, right? And so to have that opportunity, that's what really motivates Kennedy to do that. But to have the boys to come back and wrestle their last year in Tulsa, Oklahoma, is really just a fascinating thing. So we're praying that it happens.
Well, I'll be praying that it happens too, because that means I get to watch it.
Yeah, yeah. But we'll have a big, I tell you, we have a big, big party, a big congregation at the NCAA tournament this year. It's next year. It's Tulsa, man.
I'll look. I've just flown into it. I've never spent any time there.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
oh,
just
it's a great time.
Flow into it, going to Stillwater. It's pretty much the only thing I've
it's
driven through.
It's a great time,
it.
Man. Tulsa's really, really come a long way as far as like the downtown area. I mean, it's really a cool little area now. There's a lot of restaurants and some nightlife, and of course, you know, Greenwood is, you know, two blocks from downtown. You know, the historic Greenwood, right? Mm-hmm. You know the story, 1921 Greenwood.
Yes, I do. I knew Black Wall Street.
Exactly, Black Wall Street, right? So we're right there, man. And we'll have, matter of fact, we'll have a social, having a social right on Greenwood on Wednesday night, too. So we'll have to invite you to that. It's going to be really cool.
All right. I'll have to check that one out. That's actually a story I do know a little bit about. So
yeah, but then my high school is there. I got Booker T. Washington is only like 10 minutes from downtown. You know, and that court, the basketball court is named Kenny Monday Wayman Tisdale Court. Booker T. Washington High
Wayman
School.
Tisdale. Wow. Never thought we get a Sacramento Kings reference here.
Yeah.
Among other places.
Wayman Tisdale. Yeah. We grew up together.
Wow.
Yeah.
I think I have his basketball card here somewhere, because I used to collect all those cards. I got it. I had from like 88 to like 94, man. I had sports cards. Like the bar you can't see behind me is covered in baseball and basketball cards.
Wayman's my boy, man. Wayman's my boy. For sure. And so, yeah, that school and then my street, where I started wrestling at the YMCA, Northside YMCA. And so the street that the YMCA sits on is Kenny Monday Place. And so you get to see my street as well. So
man, you got a street named after you? I mean,
I do.
We got to document this stuff. But again, we could probably be here for days, because I'm just loving hearing you tell some stories, man. Because I, you know, we've got a great Ray Lewis story. We've got some, I've got so many stories here. But for now, we'll just have to let you build the program, and we'll circle back when things are rolling, man.
Absolutely, man. And hopefully you can get to come out to, you know, U23 is in June. I don't know if the only thing is they got Final X the same weekend.
Well, I'm in Final X. I got to work on nailing that one down, because that's also Hall of Fame honors weekend down in.
Yeah, because I was so pissed off when I saw that same date, man. I was like, oh my God, why would you do that the same day as U23's? So yeah, but it's what it is.
The Short Time Wrestling Podcast is proudly outfitted by Compound Sportswear. Shirts, singlets, custom gear orders, everything you need. Call up Cliff and the crew at cmptteamwear.com. Hey, you know what? Did you like the show? You want to hit that subscribe button, matttalkonline.com/listen. Various different ways to subscribe to this show on your favorite podcatcher of choice. And if you're already subscribed, you already listen, you love the show, and you want to support this show and this network, matttalkonline.com/join the team. Become a team member today.